All right, so we'll get started then.
Okay.
So welcome. And it's really a pleasure to be able to talk to you about higher self-healing meditation, which is an effortless meditation technique whose purpose really is to bring out, really to unfold our full potential. I think I mentioned to you that in your class that I taught transcendental meditation from 1973 to 2010.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then since then, I've been teaching higher self-healing meditation, which is a variation on TM in that it's effortless, it's as effective as TM, and it's much less costly. So, mm-hmm. What this meditation is a mental technique that's practiced twice a day for about 20 minutes in the morning and about 20 minutes in the late afternoon, early evening. And its purpose, really, is a sort of multifaceted, really. For the mind, its purpose is to allow the mind to experience its source and be infused with qualities of greater energy and creativity and clarity and concentration. And for the body to experience the deep relaxation that it brings, thereby releasing fatigue and deeper-rooted stress than sleep can get to, and also root out, since it's releasing stress on a twice-a-day basis, it roots out the cause of perhaps 75 to 80% of diseases that are either caused or complicated by stress, according to doctors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it also makes the nervous system more resilient because the releasing of stress on a daily basis allows the nervous system to begin to operate more to its full potential, and its full potential enables it to be much more flexible in daily life so that it picks up much less stress than it had prior to beginning a meditation. And then, of course, for our relationships, we'll talk about that. It affects our relationships as well. So we'll get into all that. At any moment that you have any questions, just jump right in, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, you've probably heard that psychologists estimate we use a small portion of our mental potential. Have you heard any numbers?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, what kind of numbers have you heard about that?
That we use only 20% once we are adults. Like, when you're young, you use, like babies are using 100%, and then and after whatever 25 or something, it goes down, and then you're using only finally 20%.
Well, that's interesting you're using that number, because actually the numbers I've heard are even lower than that, usually about 10%. Whatever, it's hard. You know, these are estimates, of course, so it's really hard to pin these down very, very specifically. But let's just say 10 to 20% then, and just, in either case, whether 10 or 20 doesn't really matter here, what we're talking then of is that the overwhelming majority of our potential, or the overwhelming amount of our potential, 80 to 90%, is untapped.
Right.
And what meditation does is provide a direct conscious contact with the inner part of our being, with actually our inner being. I'm going to give you an analogy that I think might help explain this. Have you ever done any scuba diving?
No, I haven't done it, but I know a good friend who does it, so I know everything about scuba diving.
Okay.
I haven't done it personally, yes.
Sure. So when you scuba dive, you go out with a partner or more, and then there are, of course, people on the boat. And so you jump off the boat, and you have your tank, and then you breathe naturally. Let's suppose you go down 30 feet. Or 40, let's say 40 feet, and at that point, it's the bottom of the ocean, which, of course, you know, depending on where you are, that could be.
Right, yeah.
So let's say, so there you are at the bottom of the ocean. It's very quiet, very peaceful in all directions. And you're breathing naturally with your tank, and bubbles of carbon dioxide start at the bottom of the ocean where you're breathing, and they'll rise progressively up to the surface and will pop up at the surface, be seen by the people in the boat, and they know you're fine.
Okay.
Now,
they see the
bubbles, at the surface of the ocean, because that's where the boat is. But the truth is, of course, that the bubbles actually began at the bottom of the ocean, which is where you were. They can't see there.
Yeah.
They can't see there
Yeah.
because obviously they don't
Mm-hmm.
see water. It will not allow them to see that. Thought behaves in a very similar manner. We thought starts at its source in the very depth of the mind, at the very quietest place in the mind, and is only experienced as a thought at the level that you're conscious. And in the same way that 40 feet may separate boat from bottom of the ocean,
right.
There's a gap that separates the conscious level of the mind and the deeper parts of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
What higher self-healing meditation does is, like scuba diving, it brings us into contact with the depth of the mind, the quietest, deepest places in the mind, so that
mm-hmm.
we can experience thought at its source and then experience literally that source of thought is a vast reserve of energy and creativity and intelligence. Energy because thought moves, and
right.
intelligence because it usually moves in an intelligent direction. And, of course, we have thousands and millions of thoughts over the course of a lifetime. So we're
mm-hmm.
dealing with millions and millions of currents. Some people have estimated actually billions of currents of energy and intelligence. So what happens then is that meditation, like scuba diving, you know, provides this conscious contact, and then that contact allows us to be refreshed. You know, these days, you know, virtually everybody you know has a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
and anyone
yeah.
who uses a cell phone on a regular basis, as most of us do,
yeah.
wouldn't think of going to sleep at night without charging our phone,
mm-hmm.
because we need it to behave and operate for us the next day, so we give it a chance to plug into its source.
Yeah.
Well, human beings really are treating their cell phones better than themselves.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, I mean, yes, we sleep at night, and sleeping is one way we charge up, so to speak. You know, if you've had a really long day and you're really exhausted when you go to sleep at night and you wake up and you get a good night's sleep and you wake up feeling refreshed,
yeah.
that's wonderful. But not everybody does. You know, a lot of people
mm-hmm.
wake up not feeling
yeah.
so refreshed, you know, have to drag
right.
themselves out of bed. Because what sleep does is it generally gets rid of the surface fatigue of the previous day, although not always.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really get at the deeper stuff, the stresses that have been accumulating for longer periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the interesting research that was done a long time ago, in fact, in 1970 and 1972, research was done in on the physiology of TM, for example. And what was
mm-hmm.
found was that the amount of oxygen that the body was taking in during meditation dropped about
uh-huh.
16% less than just normally just sitting there and doing nothing. You know, if you close your eyes and
it drops,
you know. It drops mm-hmm. about 16% from just
okay.
sitting and doing nothing with your eyes closed. During sleep, it drops about 8%. So in other
okay.
words, you're getting a level of rest in meditation that's qualitatively twice as deep as the deepest point in the night's sleep. Now, it doesn't mean that it's twice as much rest,
right.
you know, 20,
mm-hmm.
20 minutes versus 8 hours, but it's getting at a deeper kind, it's creating a deeper kind of rest that allows
right.
for the release of much deeper kind of stress. You know,
mm-hmm.
doctors will tell you, you know, when you're sick, you know, get as much rest as possible. We all know if you're exhausted, you take a nap. We know
yeah.
intuitively that rest releases, removes fatigue
mm-hmm.
and stress. Here we're
yeah.
getting a kind of rest that's of a much qualitatively deeper nature than, you know, what you're getting in a night's sleep. Or
yeah.
or in a nap during the day. I mean, naps certainly can be refreshing as well. But again, they're not going to get the kind of depth of rest. So
mm-hmm.
so obviously, you know, giving the mind the chance to plug into its source allows the mind to begin to behave in much more evolved and progressive manners as a result.
Uh-huh.
You know. You know, do you do any gardening, or have you ever done any gardening?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, if you were to bring, you know, a small child around who
mm-hmm.
isn't familiar with gardening and watched you when you're doing what you're doing and noticed, let's say, maybe a tree that had some that looked, you know, didn't look so good. Maybe the bark was mm-hmm. peeling, and maybe, you know, it looked like the leaves were you know looking unhealthy and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, a child would think, well, let's put some water on the bark, and let's put some water on the leaves and the stem uh-huh. and fruit and so forth. Intuitively, that makes sense to a child
mm-hmm.
because the child doesn't yet understand the concept that it's the root system that provides that nourishment to the whole tree.
Mm-hmm.
And the root system is invisible. It's under the, it's underground. It's in the earth.
Right.
You know, the truth, of course, is that when you water the root, the whole fruit and leaves and bark and stem and the whole, you know, manifestations of that tree
right.
get nourished simultaneously, holistically, is another mm-hmm. way of saying it, you know. And it's the same with us. What meditation is doing is providing an opportunity for us to reconnect to our source, to water the root, if you will, of our own inner being, so that
mm-hmm.
our ability to concentrate, even though there's no concentration in the technique itself, the mind gets clear in meditation, and as a result of that, begins to concentrate more easily. In fact, memory even gets better. And of course, as people get older, that's a real
uh-huh.
concern, naturally. One of the reasons memory improves, and I think we'll go back to my analogy of the scuba diving, you know, if somebody drops something out of the boat and you scuba dive, you're not going to find it. But if you scuba dive, you might. Because
right.
it fell, you know,
mm-hmm.
and because meditation is like scuba diving, frequently things, you know, ideas, thoughts that
mm-hmm.
were lost can be retrieved as the mind goes to those quieter places in the same
Makes
way
sense.
That you might
yeah.
find. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. So, so the ability to create also improves. People find that creativity grows. People
uh-huh.
find that they get along better with other people at work. They're more productive at work because they have
mm-hmm.
more energy, you know. So there's an overall mental improvement. And, you know, there's an analogy that I think really helps explain this as well. You know, I know when I was a boy, my brother and I used to do, you know, play around with some archery, and we had a bow and arrow
mm-hmm.
and so forth, and we would get a little target and we'd go out and shoot. And,
uh-huh.
you know, when you're young, you know, you're shown how to do it, and it seems counterintuitive. If, you know, when you're really small, if you want to make an arrow fly forward, it seems
mm-hmm.
counterintuitive that you should pull the bow back. You know,
right.
if you want it to go forward, why pull it back? Well, of course,
mm-hmm.
the reason you pull it back is that when you can give it that state of dynamic tension, when the arrow is resting on the bow,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't been released yet. It's lining up, you know, you're lining up your aim for the target. And once it's at its fullest extension back and is just, you know, in a kind of dynamic rest, really, and your aim is good, all you really do is let your fingers go and the arrow,
mm-hmm.
you know, flies forward.
Yeah.
Skill in action is very much enhanced with meditation, because really what we're doing is very analogous to what we're doing with a bow and arrow. We're actually
mm-hmm.
bringing the nervous system and the mind back to a kind of dynamic rest. Dynamic in that, obviously, rest we've discussed, but it's a conscious rest. It's not like sleep, which is an unconscious rest. In
mm-hmm.
fact, the meditative state, or I should say meditation, creates a state that is known as a fourth state of consciousness, distinct from waking, dreaming, and sleeping. It's known as pure consciousness, or in the Indian tradition, you might certainly be familiar with the term samadhi, which means
mm-hmm.
steady mind. Samadhi
yeah.
is a fourth state of consciousness, distinct from waking, dreaming, and sleeping. And in fact, in meditation, you know, we find that the body, as I said before, the body is more deeply rested than in sleep, and yet the mind is more awake than in normal waking, as measured by EEG coherence. The brainwave,
mm-hmm.
the brainwave patterns reach alpha and theta levels, and not just indicative of deep relaxation, but also of an integrated coherence between the left and right hemispheres and front and back hemispheres of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that coherence is analogous to the kind of coherence you find in a laser, for example. Like, you know, Right now it's 7:45, but in about an hour or so, if you're in a room without a, you know, with the light out, you know, right now you can still see pretty well with the light out, but in about an hour or so you won't. Ordinary room light will change that. Ordinary room light is known as incoherent light because the wave function of the light is relatively incoherent. But, of course, as I mentioned a moment ago, there is a form of light known as laser, which is a more coherent form of light, which can do extraordinary things. I watched a laser really correct or cure my wife's 2200 vision to 2020 in a matter of minutes. Basic surgery uses the coherent nature of light to do extraordinary healing. What we're doing here in meditation is creating a coherent brain where the wave function of the brain lines up in a coherent manner between the front and back and left and right. And that's really significant. We're really creating in our brains a coherence that allows us to emerge from meditation in a more coherent state, to think more clearly, to be able to make decisions more quickly, to be able to evaluate situations, even in tense situations, to be able to think more clearly and quickly. So, but again, you know, those are some of the mental benefits. Physically, there's just as many. I mean, I know a lot of doctors have been recommending meditation for years because of its healing beneficial effects to the nervous system itself. People with, you know, high blood pressure, hypertension, cardiac conditions find that the rest that meditation gives to the heart is a very, very deeply beneficial thing in terms of restoring healing capacities and helping to avoid further damage. You know, I know when I was a small boy of about three or four, I started needing allergy shots. I had an allergy to hay fever, and I had hay fever and rose fever, so I had very deep allergy problems, and so required shots. And I remember as a teenager, I literally could not walk near a lawn that was either being mowed or was freshly mowed. I would just completely tear up, and my nose would be completely stuffed, and it was really a mess. And within about 7 months of meditating, I'd say anecdotally it probably improved about 50%, and by a year or two, about 80%, and after about 2.5 years, it just disappeared. I could literally have a picnic now on a freshly mowed lawn and without any difficulty at all. So what happened? I don't know. I think I could probably say that there was some, you know, I'm using the word playfully now, my nervous system behaved nervously, again, I'm being playful here, in the face of those outside influences, you know. And I think there are a lot of people who suffer from all kinds of allergies and diseases that are caused or complicated by stress. And when meditation kind of cools out the system, calms things down, so that the nervous system becomes more of a calm system. And again, I'm using the language a little playfully here. I think that influence in the body helps to make our health better. I know there have been insurance companies in different parts of the world that have reduced premiums for meditators because they have found through their research that meditators...
Not over here, not in the U.S.
Not in the United States. No, you're right, not in the United States. But in other countries, they have seen that that meditators see doctors less frequently and go to hospitals much less frequently.
Yeah.
So there's still plenty of profit for the insurance companies to lower the premiums for meditators. So, you know, there are, you know, and also there are a lot of habits that people have adopted using dangerous substances like tobacco and alcohol, for example, dangerous drugs, that are habits that have been used by people to help cope with stresses of life. And they, of course, have hugely, you know, disastrous side effects. So, you know, there is in all humans and all animals something we know as the fight or flight response, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Yes.
And that is a mechanism built into all of these life forms designed to save us, to save us from a dangerous, life-threatening situation, to arm the body with more adrenaline, to allow the blood to pump much more, allow the heart to pump much more blood, to get nutrients to the cells, oxygen to the cells, all of that to either run away or fight. And it's required. It's necessary. However, because nervous systems are so stressed in our culture, people's fight or flight responses are being triggered on a daily basis in situations that have nothing to do with life-threatening. You know, the boss says, oh, do me a favor, see me after lunch. I want to see you for a few minutes after lunch. And the whole lunch hour is fraught with worry. You know, people are in traffic, you know, and the fight or flight response is firing, even though there's no threat.
So what would you say for doing it twice a day? Would you say to do it with a mantra or just on concentrate on the breathing?
Well, we're going to talk in a few minutes about how it's done. So I will answer that question. The short answer is the mantra. But I'll get into that in more detail in a few minutes.
Okay.
So essentially, you know, what meditation is doing is calming the system down so that it doesn't interpret things as a threat, you know, unless it is a real threat. And that saves the body tremendous wear and tear, because there's tremendous strain on the body to have all this adrenaline flying through it, you know, and all these chemicals just deplete the body, deplete the system when it's unnecessary. So, you know, you're talking about an overall improvement of health. And then, of course, relationships are enriched with meditation, because for the simple reason that when you're feeling relaxed and when you're feeling comfortable and you're not feeling so stressed out, it's so much easier to be with people. It's so much more fun to be with people. Mm-hmm. It's easier to love and to give and to share and all of the things that we gain by being in, you know, harmony with other people. But it's hard to be in harmony with people. It's hard to be loving if you're really stressed out, and far too many people are really stressed out. And, you know, so relationships improve. In fact, there have even been quite a few studies which have shown that meditation can actually have an impact on the larger society as a whole. Some years back, the TM organization had a press conference in Washington, D.C., and they had imported on their own at their own expense enough meditators to create enough of a population in Washington to, in their opinion, actually lower the crime rate. So it drew a lot of press attention. The press came and they reported that there would be a prediction that the crime rate would drop during the period of time that the meditators were present. Because what's been found is that 1 in 100 people in a community can actually help lower crime, reduce accidents, and reduce hospital admissions. And what they found in Washington was just that crime rate dropped significantly. And at the end of that period, I think it was 3 months, the TM people said, you know, if the government will fund these people being here in their hotels, then they'll stay. But the government said no. And so the people had to go back to their jobs and their families, which they left at their own cost. And the crime rate went back up again. So, you know, governments are often slow to respond because they, you know, for whatever the reasons. But the point is that there seems to be a correlation between having 1 in 100 people in a community meditating and actually having an effect on the rest of the community in terms of, you know. So, you know, so what happens is, you know, when a person sits in meditation in Hartford, Connecticut, and their mind experiences that source, that transcendent place in them, it's the same place, it's the same source as their neighbors and the people across the street and the people down the road. And so it's as if the meditator in Hartford is stimulating in some way that same place in others, even though they're doing whatever they're doing and not meditating. That seems to be the resonant effect of it. So I mentioned that, you know, the technique is effortless. One of the biggest problems that people face when they meditate other techniques is that they say it's really hard to concentrate. It's really hard to control the mind of thoughts. And in this technique, there's none of that. There is absolutely no concentrating. And the reason is that the transition from the waking state to the fourth state of consciousness or samadhi, pure consciousness, is effortless, which means that no effort creates it. And the reason for that is that every time we go from one state of consciousness to the next, it's always effortless. In a few hours, we're both going to, depending on our, you know, our sleeping routines, we're both going to, you know, get into bed, close the light, and put our head on a pillow. And in a matter of either, you know, sometimes a short time, sometimes a little longer, whatever it is, you will go from waking to sleeping without any trying on your part, because any trying will just keep you up longer.
Right.
For the simple reason that sleep, or the transition to sleep, is carried on by something bigger than your own individual will. It's a an intelligence that allows that to take place. And the same intelligence is at work in meditation. That's the reason why we don't try to concentrate. We don't, I should say, we don't concentrate. We don't try to control the process in any way, because there's a bigger intelligence at work here, the same intelligence that beats your heart, that breathes for you. In a sense, we allow that same bigger intelligence to carry on this technique. And the good news here is that the mind, every human mind, wants more happiness. And when you give it the opportunity to move in that direction, it will do so very spontaneously. I remember I was once giving a talk on meditation in my home in Woodstock, New York, and there were people on couches and chairs facing me, and they were facing the deck, and beyond the deck was a backyard, beyond the backyard was woods. I was my back was turned, so I couldn't see them. I was facing the people who were facing outdoors. And, and I was describing that the nature of the mind is always to move toward more happiness, and it will always do so spontaneously without any effort at all. That's just the nature of the mind, any mind. And as I said that, the weirdest thing happened. Several people literally got up from their chairs to look past me, which is a very weird thing to do. You know, so I turned around. Obviously, something was going on, and what was going on was a mother deer and her baby fawns were had just emerged from the woods and were, you know, running across the backyard in that very beautiful way that deer move. And that had caught the attention of the people who were facing them. They, in other words, they literally demonstrated the very point I was making, which was that they brought their attention from the lecture to the deer, totally spontaneously without trying. That's the way meditation works, too. Meditation, through the use of a mantra, allows the body and mind to be, what the mantra does is really allows the body to begin to relax and allows the mind to move in the direction of the source. In this, in other words, to allow that scuba diving, analogous scuba diving process to take place. And as the mind does move toward that, it gets closer and closer to that field, that transcendental field within us, which by its nature is also peaceful and blissful. Ananda,
but if you keep repeating the same mantra, by any chance, does it make your mind dull?
Great question. No. Well, there are mantras that are not designed for the average person, for example, who is a householder. There are mantras that are designed for for reclusive lifestyles that, if used by a householder, could in fact make the mind dull, could make the mind less interested in worldly things. The mantras that are used in this technique do not have that effect. In fact, they have quite the opposite effect. They have the effect of, A, bringing the mind within and then B, allowing a person to emerge more engaged, more more fresh, more alive, more, you know, more present. So the opposite of what you're suggesting is what takes place. Now, you know, mantras have been used for, you know, millennia, certainly in India.
Yeah.
And essentially, the purpose of a mantra is to have this life-supporting influence. And that's really important because as the mind gets to the very, very deep places, thought is more powerful. Those levels of the mind are much more powerful. So you want to be entertaining a very harmonious vibration at that point. And that's what the mantras are, harmonious vibration. So, you know, in the same or in an analogous way that mothers and grandmothers have used lullabies to put babies to sleep or put babies from the waking state to the sleeping state, the mantras have an analogous effect of taking the mind from the waking state to the transcendental state. So the key here is to use the mantra in an effortless way rather than to concentrate on it, rather than to try to think it clearly and try to control it. And by having this very easy, relaxed approach to the mantra, and not just that, but also an easy, relaxing approach to whatever occurs in the mind at the time, the person begins to settle down and have a much more peaceful experience. Now, essentially...
Do you have to sit... I know you have to sit in a quiet place. You have to sit in the same place every day.
Actually, no, that's not true. You don't have to sit in the same place, and it doesn't even have to be a quiet place. I mean, obviously, it's a lot nicer to meditate in a quiet place than to meditate in a rock concert. But I once did meditate in a rock concert. I really did. And because I had a job, and I had to go straight from the job to the concert... I couldn't get a seat on the train, and so, you know, I was a guest of someone who had the tickets, and I had to sit through the opening act, and I meditated during the opening act, and it was very noisy because it was a rock concert, but it was also relaxing. Now, it wasn't as quiet, clearly. I couldn't hear any. I couldn't hear. All I could hear, of course, was the music, and I say hear because when you sit in a quiet place and meditate, it's as if you can hear and feel the silence in your own mind, which, of course, is drowned out in a rock concert. So the bottom line is you can literally meditate on buses and trains, you know, as long as you're not having to drive. You can meditate in a car as long as you're not driving. You can meditate, You don't have to be in a lotus position. If you like a lotus position, you can certainly use it, but it's not required. Any sitting position other than laying down is or standing up is fine. So now, concentration techniques keep the mind at one point, and that prevents the mind from having its natural movement toward more happiness. That's the downside of concentration techniques. And there are techniques of contemplation in which a person might contemplate something like God or love or truth or beauty or something along those lines. And the mind will move, but it will move in what we might call a horizontal direction. It will move on a level of meaning. You know, you'll get the meaning of these ideas. Yeah. And that's analogous to swimming across the surface of the ocean. When you swim across the surface of the ocean, there's all kinds of movement. But the movement is horizontal, as distinct from the scuba diving, which is vertical. So the beauty of this technique that I'm talking about is that it keeps the mind active, but not on the level of meaning. And that's the important. It's the sound value of the mantra that allows for this dive to take place. Now, you know, there's a, comments or questions?
No, that's fine.
There's a tradition from where all this comes from, and at the time of instruction, there's a puja that's performed. I'm sure you know what a puja is. And
I know what a puja is, okay.
Most people don't, but I know in your background, I assumed you did.
Yeah.
And so there's a puja performed, which, you know, honors the tradition of teachers from whom meditation is Meditation Springs. And so, so it takes about 7 or 8 minutes, and that's performed.
There must be a prayer or something for that.
Say that again?
There must be a prayer. You must be praying
to
the teacher.
That's right. The puja recounts, it's performed in Sanskrit, and it recounts, it's a thanksgiving, it's a gratitude, really.
On
the part of the teacher to the tradition of masters from whom the meditation is.
Correct, and asking for blessings, and asking for their blessings.
And so that also elevates the mind of the teacher. Just put the teacher in the most receptive state to pass this knowledge on. And then what happens is, you know, the mantra's presented and you meditate on it for about, 15 seconds. And in 15 seconds, you have an experience. And then we discuss it, and then you do it for another few minutes. And we have a discussion, and then another few more minutes, and then for 20 minutes. And then we talk about your experience. More knowledge given based on your experience. And then it's basically taught over the course of 3 days. So the first day takes about an hour, the second day about an hour and a quarter, and the third day about an hour and a half. And each day more knowledge is given. The second day gets into the logistics. I'm sorry, the first day gets into the second day gets into logistics, and the third day gets into it's a twofold part. The first part is dedicated to an understanding of what happens when you meditate and why each, what kinds of experiences are possible and why each meditation may vary from one to the next. And then the second part of that that evening or afternoon, depending on when it's done, is dedicated to the role that activity plays in helping stabilize and create higher states of consciousness. So we talk about a higher state of consciousness and the qualities of it and a fifth state of awakening, absolutely, and I've what I've managed to see be very successful is that the technology has advanced now to the point where it's as effective doing the course through Skype as it is in person. So I've taught people in Canada and California and Arizona and different parts of the distance, we're separated by about 2.5 hours.
It doesn't
matter.
It's
not an obstacle.
Yeah.
No, it's not an obstacle.
No. Yeah,
so,
I know that.
I do prefer the use of Skype as compared to FaceTime because it's a bigger screen.
Yeah, it's like I teach her yoga on Google Hangouts.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, it's great. great. Wonderful. So that's what's involved. So there are three requirements for learning. One is time, the time to have those meetings,
right?
In a row, and I've been so committed to teaching this that I will and have taught the course solely for one person. If one person is ready to start, then I would teach the course So I don't require the need for a large number of people to do a course.
So that's
one thing is time. The second is there's a physiological component too. What's been found is that the body needs to be free of non-prescribed drugs for 15 days prior to learning. There seems to be some impediment caused by certainly psychedelic drugs and even recreational drugs like marijuana take a long time to eliminated from the system. They metabolize very, very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been found to cloud the learning. So if somebody has told me that they've smoked some marijuana, I'd say, well, let's wait at least 15 days before starting your course.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one piece. And the third is financial. I mean, I stopped teaching transcendental meditation because when I was teaching it, they charged $2,500 to learn it. And eventually they dropped it to $1,500, and I thought that's just still way too much. So what I've done is I've taken $1,000 off that and offer this for, I think, a very modest fee of $500, which is really a one-time fee. I make available a free monthly advanced class, which is done over a conference line, and people, meditators from all over the country, you know, join in, and it's a wonderful hour and a half, hour and a quarter, hour and a half advanced knowledge and checking and meditation and so forth that really deepens people's understanding and experience. So
what is that?
That's
is that
part
like
of that.
Once a month or something? Or
exactly. It's once a month. That's right. Absolutely
okay.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's optional, of course, but it's available and it's free.
Yeah.
It's a lifetime program.
Uh-huh.
So that's what the course fee, you know, pays for all of that.
Right.
Yeah. So are there any other comments or questions that I could answer for you?
No, after talking to you, I just have to at least, I always knew I wanted to do meditation, so at least I should try a little bit on my own first. You know, I don't know if I'll be able to do it twice a day, but at least once a day.
Now, when you say it, are you referring to what I'm talking about or are you referring to something else?
No, I'm just talking to my own pranayam and that the yoga practice that I do. And at the end of it, you know, just to maybe try to spend some more time on meditation with some mantra on my own first, just to see how it goes.
Okay.
And then now that I know all of this, I can talk to my friends about this.
Okay, and also I'd be happy, you know, I give these periodically, so if you do have friends interested in hearing about this, I'd be happy to set up another, you know, have them participate in the next one.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But thank you very much for taking the time just for me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And let me just repeat one thing that I said in your class, but maybe you didn't get through. So, you know, any old mantra doesn't have quite the same effects as those that are really customized based on gender, age, and blood type. And Om, for example, which is the most well-known mantra, is fantastic for people who live in monasteries and ashrams, but really not the mantra to use if you're a householder. Because it breaks down, it breaks down interest in material things, money, and so forth. So if you're going to use a mantra, don't use that one.
No. Just Om, you're saying, right?
Yes.
I think you had told us the same thing to do it in during the class. And I remember I told you it was very boring. I couldn't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, why don't you do an experiment? Why don't you do what you're doing for, you know, a month or so or, you know, whatever. See how that works. If you're very, very happy with that, fine. If you want to see something else that is, you know, has been based on something that's been very, very scientifically researched, I'm here and I'd be happy to share that knowledge and technique with you.
Okay. Sure.
Randy, well, it's a pleasure talking with you.
Same here. Thank you very much again.
My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.